Welcome to Adventures in Artslandia. I am here with Blake Stone, Mitchell Castillo, and Francisco Garcia, all of whom are working at Milagro Theater right now in a play called Swimming While Drowning. And the way I found out about it is I just had the great pleasure of working with Blake on a show at Artist Repertory Theater, and that's how it is, you know, all of us folks who do this work end up working with each other at some point in time. I was thinking about this on my way here because I came from a rehearsal at the opera and working on a concert, and I was thinking, no, you all are working on a show right now, and as an actor, that's just this fantastic kind of place, like an island of work where you have set schedule. And how do you generate your own enthusiasm about your art when you're not in a process like a rehearsal process?
That's a tough question.
It's kind of interesting, right? I mean, I was just in L.A. last week, and I went to the Contemporary Art Museum, and I was so just inspired by the work, and especially in today's political climate, I thought, oh, my God, what am I doing? Why am I doing? How do you fill yourself up? I mean, this play obviously really speaks to a lot of issues, and right now this is obviously your focus.
Yeah, well, I know for me, for instance, as a director, I'm attracted to theater that deals with issues of social change, issues of representing underserved or non-represented voices that we usually hear out in the community, whether it's stories by playwrights of color or LGBTQ youth, because, you know, a lot of the time we don't necessarily get to see those characters portrayed in popular culture, when, you know, if you're watching television or if you're watching film, and even regional theater. I mean, there's been more of a shift towards that type of work in the last couple of years, but a lot of times, you know, those are the voices that I feel need to be heard.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm so impressed with Milagro and how they are a part of the community. It's their work just continues to kind of blow my mind and how they go about doing business. Yeah. I think it's really fantastic.
It's raw.
Mm-hmm.
It's raw. All their work is raw.
So now it's a two-person show. It's Blake and Mitchell. So describe a little bit of the show and who you're playing and what are the issues that are brought up in it that really, you know, get your juices flowing.
Do you want to begin? Sure. I play Angelo Mendez. Mm-hmm. And this show takes place in L.A. at a homeless shelter and LGBTQ homeless shelter, and it's just it's a coming of age story, truly, and it's a friendship as well, a friendship story as well. And, you know, Angelo runs away from home and ends up in this place, and he believes that it's kind of like a dorm, like a college thing. He's thinking like, oh, I'm gonna go make some friends, and turns out that the person he ends up meeting, Mila, is just not the person he expected to meet, and it's just the conflict of accepting who you are and being okay with that. And it's a beautiful story. It has a lot of slam poetry in it as well. Mm. I think it's really cool that we mix that in as well. And it's not your typical show. It's not your typical show at all. Just with the subject matter that we're talking about, I haven't seen a show in Portland recently that had slam poetry in the show as well. And then just being in a two-person show, I think it's really special, and really you have to rely on the other person a lot, and they rely on you.
It can be a little brutal because you know, when you're working in it, I'm so used to working in these ensembles where it's like you feel like you're a finely tuned machine, but when it's just Mitchell and I, like that is our machine, and it has to be so well oiled, or else, you know, the whole thing come off the rails.
And this show is hard. Like, you, like, I went into it thinking like, okay, like, this is kind of what it's like, and there's just so much to it. Like, I think this is the first show that I've done where like I've had to dig deep, you know, because I've done a lot of musicals, and, you know, a lot of that just it just kind of happens, you know. And there's so many things that you worry about a big picture, and this, it's like just you and just Blake.
Minute by minute.
And minute by minute, you know, scene by scene. And for the most part, we don't even leave the stage. Like, mm-hmm. I think Blake leaves like once for like 6 seconds, you know, and
that's kind of one of the things that why I think that it's so much fun to share theater with people who, many of whom haven't seen theater, or people who don't see it as free, because the risks that you take when you really look at the bare bones of what people need to do when they're doing this work, it's inspiring, just the risk-taking. Even I'm doing a fertile ground reading right now with a lot of young people, and I hear them singing, and I watch them, and I think, that takes guts. They're just putting it all out there.
Yes.
And especially telling a story with this kind of resonance, yes, and depth and, you know, some really meaty issues.
In this show in particular, it really does feel like, I mean, every scene, every line, it really does feel like we are leaving a big part of ourselves out there. Because the story, I mean, you know, people might come into it with preconceived notions of like, oh, well, two boys in a LGBT homeless shelter, maybe it's like a love story, but it's so much more than that. It's like a beautiful friendship of these two people who are from completely different worlds, but also from, like, you know, the same world internally, and so
yeah,
it's very real.
I know. I think it in terms of it being a love story, I think it is a love story, and I say that in with the utmost respect, in the sense that it dives so deep in terms of, like, things that you do, empathy that you have,
yes,
compassion, friendship, all the gambits that really tie into love.
Yeah, and love for the experience.
And the love that you end up having for yourself in the end, that you gain from the other character.
And Emiliano Rodriguez, the playwright, does not waste a word in the show. It's all there, and there's something about the show, that the pace in it, but you don't, it's nothing is too quick and nothing is too slow. Like, everything is the perfect amount that you need to keep going. And I think that's what's really great about the show, is it's going
to
keep you at the edge of your seat.
We're going to be on the edge of their seats, absolutely.
And speaking about the playwright, one thing that's really exciting about the show is that it's been developed over the last couple of years. They've been doing a lot of workshops of it. It was part of the Latino Theater Commons, which is a national theater festival that they have. And it was one of the works that was selected, I think it was in 2015, and they did a workshop of it there. And that's actually how it came to the attention of the theater company, because Olga Sanchez and Jose Gonzalez were there, and they saw the workshop of it. It was in Chicago, and they liked it, and they contacted the playwright. And since then, he's had several workshops of it. They're doing a reading of it at San Diego Rep in February, which actually Danielle Jaquez is directing, who used to be here at Milagro last year. And we're lucky that we've been able to get the world premiere of it. So it's really nice to and he's been here. Emilio has been, he's in Detroit right now, but, you know, a few weeks ago he was with us for the whole week just doing rewrites and watching it. And that was really a blessing to be able to work with him and the actors.
And that's really interesting to explain to people maybe who are listening who aren't in the world of making theater, that this is a... In some cases, these plays are living, breathing animals, and if you have this great fortune of having a playwright come in and look at, you know, that's so exciting for you too, because you know these rewrites are, you know, they have to do with you three and what you bring to the table.
You got to open his eyes about some part, aspects of the way he opened our eyes about a lot, especially we aren't poets, and so... You know, we come from, like, the world of musical theater, where your character is moved to sing, but these characters are moved to, like...
Speak, sing, slam poetry.
Rhythm,
and that's what I keep on telling him. I'm like, always think of it as music. You know?
Right, it's so fun, because when we were working on Civil War, and I remember working on rapping with Vin or with Dre, or, you know, and that's, like, not my lexicon, but I love it.
You have
to allow
yourself to just be free and do it.
And feel that rhythm of spoken word. It's really cool.
And I think this is the first time that, I'm not sure about you, but this is the first time I think I've really got to create a character from scratch, like nothing. Like, this is going to be
no
the first...
No prior knowledge about this person.
Of anybody else doing it, or, like, you are the first stepping stone of it, and there's a little bit of pressure in that, but, like, this can go in any way that you want, and I think we have a great team behind us, and we did a run-through yesterday, and yesterday was a breakthrough for the show, I believe. Like,
thank Kevin, it was the day before the podcast.
Right. But, yeah, it's just... It's a great show, and I think, there was an article yesterday in Broadway World, like, they said it, like, nothing in Portland. There's nothing in Portland right now like this show, and I think that's what's really special.
No, oh, that's great.
And even something that in an article that was done on the playwright Emilio, there was something he said that that really stood out to me. He was talking about how it's the job of playwrights who are people of color or part of the LGBT community or whatever your background. It's your job to write a story that maybe it's not going to relate to the average bear, but it has to relate to you, and you can open the eyes of your audience to see where you're coming from, make it a universal experience.
Well, and this is, again, like, really, I've been thinking, you know, why are you doing this podcast? What's important to you? And what is important to me is how people behave in the experience of making theater, then how we relay it to other people so that they can see what kind of tools that we use, because I believe that the tools that we use as artists are the tools that will help us move forward in inclusivity and diversity, because it's listening, it's being authentic, it's taking risks, and it's not letting, you know, slights go by. Remember, you know, we talk so much about those types of things in Civil War Christmas. It's like microaggression.
Yes.
What is that? When you're hurt, how do you express it? How do you be in real contact with people? Because I think we're in a chasm right now of people not wanting to go there. And the plays like this are the things that are a springboard to those kinds of conversations.
And I definitely think we're going to be seeing a resurgence of, you know, this type of material based on the political climate that's currently happening.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the things I tell my acting students. I'm like, I always feel like, because they're really kind of depressed after the election.
Mm-hmm.
And I told them, well, look at it this way. I bet we're going to be seeing some really great art in the next 4 years.
You're right. And that's very heartening. And I'm thinking a lot about what types of experiences we can give people who are coming to see these plays to digest a lot of this information, you know? Are you going to have talkbacks and other events?
We will be doing
supportive type.
Some talkbacks. We'll be doing school shows as well.
Mm-hmm.
In addition to our...
Oh, that's great.
Shows,
yeah. I'm really hoping that people will engage with theater. You know, on occasion, I'll get letters, or people will get letters. I know theaters get letters about plays, mostly when they're saying, that was horrible, or I can't believe you did that. But, you know, I'm excited about the prospect of us kind of being a point of engagement for a lot of this political discourse.
Yeah. Cool.
You know, but... So what do you do to feed your artistic mind, you know, with the play and also out of it, you know? I mean, are you kind of focusing on who these people are and what they do right now? Or, you know, how do you give yourself the food you need to go into rehearsal?
Well, I know as a director, one thing that really kind of keeps me going, because I'm tired sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
I have a daughter, and I'm like, okay, well, got to go to rehearsal now. But I get so excited because when I come to the rehearsal room, these two actors, they're just always ready to work.
Mm.
They're always given 110%. And you know, unfortunately, that's not always the case. But when you work with two young actors that are so committed to what they're doing, it's inspiring, and it makes you have to be on your A game as well, even sometimes when you're tired.
Right, and that's another piece of the puzzle for people who don't make theater. They don't realize possibly how many of us have multitudes of jobs and juggling children and relationships. And do you have a job in addition to acting?
Not right now. I've been lucky to just been able to keep going.
Nice.
Yeah, but as to your question, I think for me it's the words.
Mm.
You know, like it's... Angelo is the poet of the show,
mm-hmm.
and I think in everything he does is from his heart.
It's kind of fun because I saw you do In the Heights, and
Usnavi's
got kind of a similar
and it's
way.
And it's the very... they're like kind of like in the same trajectory of, like, that's what Angelo would be like when he is the age of Usnavi, I think, you know.
They're storytellers.
Yes, they're storytellers. They're the rock of wherever they're at, and...
Mm-hmm.
Angelo is struggling to find his voice, but throughout the play, and you'll see it, at the end of each scene, there's a piece of poetry. And it's kind of like a flash to the forward and then back and forward and back, and then he ends up where he needs to be at the end. And I think
spoiler alert.
Yeah,
I guess I should have said that a minute ago.
There's a lot more to it. But yeah, for me, it's just really listening to Blake. Honestly, that's the thing that really has helped me and driven me to, for the, like you said, the food for the characters. In this show, you can't be thinking about what you're doing. Like me, like, oh, what do I look like? What am I doing? It's like, I'm getting everything I need.
Snap you right out of it, yeah.
Right. That's the game, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you're like, snap in, snap out. Whoa, I'm there, I'm out. I'm out. Yes.
And that's something that, you know, we've worked a lot on in the rehearsal room, just listening to each other. Because, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, it's the foundation of what we do, but surprisingly, so many actors take it for granted. Yes. And we've really just worked on exercises where we're just kind of just listening, taking each other in, taking each other's presence in.
It seems, it's so deceptively simple.
It is, exactly.
Exactly.
But it's the hardest thing to do at times, you know?
I mean, the great thing about this show is that I feel like it makes listening to each other a little bit easier, that I wouldn't say we're necessarily anything like the characters that we're playing, but we can relate to them because the things on their mind are like, you know, who the hell am I going to be in 5 years? Like, how do I relate to my culture? Mitchell and I are both people of color growing up in America. I mean, you know, so the things that these kids are going through are, to hear him say some of his lines, it's like Blake hears it and goes, oh yeah. But then Mila also gets to hear it and be like, yeah, like I'm feeling this, you know? Mm-hmm.
Well, and I think it's interesting. This is like the first time for myself that I've actually played a kid my age, around my age, you know, or younger. You know, I've always played up.
Mm-hmm.
Or in a musical, like you can't really, sometimes you don't even know,
know,
right?
Mm-hmm.
But like, and I think that was interesting as to be like, oh, okay. Like I remember when I first got the script and it was like 15-year-old boy and I was like, are you... this is a mistake, are you sure? I remember emailing them, like, is this the Mitchell Castillo, not Michael?
Mm-hmm.
But they're like, yeah, and I remember going into it, and Emiliano, like we said, we kind of just created the show. It was its own thing, and we kind of just created it together, which I think is really beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the things that, you know, when I was given the script and hired to direct this, I was like, oh, wow, okay. In terms of casting, how do we go about casting? Because, you know, a lot of times when we do shows that deal with youth, especially professional shows, we tend to cast up.
Mm-hmm.
We tend to cast someone that's 25 to play 15 or 16-year-olds. And we saw a lot of great young actors that came in to audition, a lot of them in the kind of mid-20s range. And then when I saw these two and then the camaraderie that they had between the two of them and the fact that they worked together before, to me it was like a no-brainer to actually be able to cast two actors that were close to the same age as them, especially for when you bring in young audiences. I think they relate so much better to that when they see themselves represented on stage.
I agree. It's really exciting and fun for kids to see themselves really represented.
Yeah,
it's nice. So I love to ask people, in addition to what you're working on right now, what's something recently that you enjoyed, some kind of adventure in the art world that's, you know, in Portland, anywhere really, something that really rocked your boat
that we personally were in?
Something that you just saw or participated in? Or
I feel like that show you and I just finished together, Civil War Christmas, really gave me a lot of tools that I got to carry into this process, because I mean, even though in that show I was playing, like, I don't know how old that character was, like 50 60, but I mean, I got to think about all that, the listening, the, you know, the connecting to each person on stage. Whereas in this show I only have one, but like Civil War Christmas dealt with some like heavy stuff, and we got to like feel together and cry together and laugh together, and we get to do all that together on this stage, and I feel like I grew a lot in that previous show.
It was interesting. I was just in the artist rep lobby, and the art is still up on the walls.
Absolutely.
I'm not sure how long that is going to run in the lobby, but it is some of the most incredible visual art that was associated with that show. I'm just crazy about it.
Yeah.
So exciting to see.
And I still got the calendar up that they made for us and all those pictures.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And the birthdays.
Yes.
Don't forget the birthdays. How about you, Mitchell?
Um, on everything, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, it's just every event, like, I was at opening night for Civil War Christmas, and mm-hmm. I remember looking around and just being like, this is my life.
Aww.
You know, like, these are my friends, and I think, and if you ask anybody 4 years ago or 3 years ago, I never would have thought. I didn't even like theater. When I was in high school, I used to skip drama class. I didn't even like it.
You grew up here in Portland?
I grew up in San Diego, but I moved here when I went to high school.
Oh, okay. And so you went to high school here in Portland?
Yes, I went to Wilson.
Oh, okay.
How
on earth did you get sidetracked over here?
It's a funny... a girl.
Oh, of course.
You know, it's just... She was like, come to an audition, and I did, and the rest is history, you know, and... The first show that I did was Heathers with Blake.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
Yeah.
So there's lots of young people
exactly.
from Heathers that are in the reading I'm doing at Pearl
exactly.
Grant. So.
Oh,
yeah, that's interesting.
And I think it's just every show that I do, every show that I see, every event that I'm at,
mm-hmm.
it's just, there's just like a family, you know, of people that support you and love you and that you support and love back. That it's just, there's nothing like it. You know, you can be on a team, you can be at a job and really love your job, but not only if you're doing this, you love it, and everything else comes into place. And I believe that you keep going. And I think that's what fuels me to want to keep doing this, is because not only do I love to do it, but it's like, I can't picture myself doing anything else.
Yeah, they say that that's one of the measures of whether you should keep doing it, you know.
Right.
But I get it's the job where you really you bust through so many boundaries of relationship, authenticity
yeah.
in relationship. It's required
yeah.
when you do great work. That is just it's not the norm now. Not I think it should be the norm in the world, but it's
yeah.
just not yet.
Yeah.
How about you in terms of something?
The last thing I think that I mean, there's a lot of things that get me excited.
Mm-hmm.
But I shot
name something weird.
Okay. I shot a film this summer here,
uh-huh.
Lean on Pete. I'm not sure if you,
yes.
the studio. Yeah,
uh-huh.
And we don't really get studio films that often here.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was fortunate that I was able to book a role. My character's name is Bob.
Oh.
And it's a small supporting role. But for anyone that's not familiar with it, it's... filmed by Andrew Hay. He's the director, and he also adapted it. The book is written by someone else, but he adapted it from the book. And Andrew is known for, he directed a film last year called 45 Years that was nominated for an Oscar and for a BAFTA. So he's a very well-known up-and-coming director, and the film starred Steve Buscemi and Chloe Sevigny and Charlie Plummer. And so it was great to have an opportunity to work with Andrew and to see the way that he works as a director and in that medium film. I mean, I know that it's different from what we do, but it's very similar, especially the way that he goes about it in terms of he does a lot of improvisational work, which, you know, when you're working in a studio film, you don't really get to do that often, and to have the opportunity to work with him and be able to have him direct me in that way. It was exciting.
I bet. And then I know in the various mediums you work in, you get, you pick up on fun tools and ideas just, it's like a one jumping board to springboard.
And one of the things about him and just directors in general that really have stuck with me is not just their love for the work and their eye for detail, but also just the way they interact with their actors,
mm-hmm.
and how caring they are with their actors,
mm-hmm.
and you know, that's not always the case with some directors, but when you find someone that kind of balances that along with just really having a love for the work they're doing in the art, I mean, it's infectious. You want to do the best type of work you can for them.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's one thing that's special about this show. I was talking to Blake about Francisco, and there's just something about him that is just like everything he says, you just understand. You may not get it. You may not get why you understand it, but you understand it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just the way he's like, he can say very little and it's like a paragraph,
yes.
you know, and it's just, he has the right words. And I thought it was interesting because at auditions, he didn't say a thing.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't say a word. Like, I was like, okay. And you know, we get to rehearsal and he had his vision for it. And I remember telling Blake, like, it was like the second day of rehearsal. I was like, dude, this guy is the real deal. Like, there's just something just about
like,
yeah.
Say a it's just a simple sentence. I mean, I have this monologue where I'm pretty upset when I deliver it, and the other day after doing it, he was like, how about less angry, more hurt? And it like changed everything about the delivery. It slowed it down, and like I didn't even need like a specific note, just like an emotion. Like, okay, yeah. It's just so many directors, especially in, when you work in such a small community, they can talk in circles a lot, or they can be very specific about what they want you to do. Say, well, since I'm an actor, you should do what I want you to do. And it's like, you know, but it's great working with someone who, and especially when it's a two-person show, I mean, everything everyone says is so important. We're all so, it's a collaboration.
Especially with a new work, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think, and he's talking about the love for the work, and I think that's really, like, this show is like that, very much. And I think once you get into the habit or the mind state of, okay, it's another job, but let's go, like, it's just another day at work, and I think that's when the work starts to go down, you know? It's like you don't love it anymore, you don't have fun, you're just doing, it's the next paycheck.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the next project you're doing. And it's like, for directors, it's be really easy to do that. You're there for 3-4 weeks and you're out, you know, see it once or, you know, and then you don't have to go back. You know, I think that you can tell when a director really loves the show they're doing,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I think he's a very special director.
Is Emilio going to come back and see the show?
He will. He'll be there opening night.
Oh, no pressure.
No
pressure.
He's a very sweet man.
Yes.
Yeah.
And now is opening night February 9th?
10th.
February
10th.
First
preview.
Got it. Opening night's the 10th.
Yeah, we play from the 9th through the 25th.
And I see something called the Art and Identity Showcase on the schedule. That has something to do with the show?
Yeah, they tend to tie in different types of workshops
and things.
And
then a bilingual poetry after party with an open mic.
Actual slam poetry.
Oh, how cool.
A lot of that to tie into the work that we're doing.
So I'll put the Milagro website up, of course, and people can look at the schedule and see how they can, you know, enjoy the show, come see the show, and then participate in some way. You know, it's fun and exciting.
It's a pretty short run, and tickets are going to sell like freaking hotcakes.
Right.
So
very short run. It's like hour 10?
The show, yeah, hour 15.
Wow, and no intermission.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
We're kind of steering away from wanting to have an intermission.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? How theater is gravitating toward that type of experience.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of
they're going to sell a lot more Depends in
the
future.
Yeah, young contemporary plays that are coming out where you know you have hour 15, hour and a half,
uh-huh.
no intermission.
Right. Makes for compact and very efficient.
It keeps you going.
Yeah.
You don't want to break. You don't want to break the tension.
The tension.
Like, the show has a lot of the stakes are high at every point. Like the first 2 minutes of the show, the stakes are already right here. And
ooh,
you
I'm
don't
excited.
You don't know why, and then it's just breaking that 35 minutes into a show.
Mm-hmm.
You're just like, well, what? You know,
yeah.
Just keeping it going. I think that's what. Again, it's really special about the show, too.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for taking the time to talk to me about the show.
Yeah,
and I'll put up the website, and I know you're going to be packed up, and it's going to be really wonderful to see.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thanks for making such a great contribution to the community, too.
You too.
You too.
Thank you very much.
It's funny, it's paradoxical, you know, these little tiny things that really can move mountains.
Yeah.
I believe it.
Absolutely.
Just gotta start somewhere.